and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. This is the Yelky Mantis. That is a soft J, in case you were wondering, from IRC. Today's episode of Hacker Public Radio is on homebrew. Now, going to presuppose a few things. First, going to presuppose that you know how to cook. If you don't know how to cook, this is going to be very difficult for you. Second, I'm going to assume that you are a hacker mentality, which means that you know how to take measurements and keep records if you want to make really good beer. And finally, I'm going to assume that you have some kind of access to a homebrew shop. And since you're listening to this podcast, you have access to the internet. There is a great homebrew shop that I will include a link to in the show notes. Having said all that, listen to the podcast one time through, head off to the homebrew shop, buy your beer making kit and all of the equipment that you might need. In general estimate, if you get all of the equipment listed in this episode, as well as a homebrew kit, it'll probably run you around $90 to $100, depending on, you know, what kind of equipment you get and what kind of homebrew kit you get. The homebrew kits are the sources of all your ingredients. Now, that's kind of the little introduction. One last note before we get into the whole process, talking about beer, what is beer, and so on, is that this is by no stretch of the imagination designed to be the authoritative instructions on making beer. There's a lot of specific examples and specific directions depending on the style of beer that you want to make. This is just kind of a general overview for making what's called a partial mash or a partial grain beer. So today we're going to be talking about making your own beer. A subject near and dear to the hearts of many of us, I'm sure, is beer. Now, if you are inclined, I guess that would be the word, to drink such things as Icy Light or Pabst Blue Ribbon, or even, you know, are very, very happy with Miller or Budweiser, this is probably not the podcast for you, because this beer is going to taste good. And obviously you don't like beer that tastes good. You like beer that has alcohol. Yeah. So anyway, what is beer? Beer is malt, hops, yeast, and water. That's it. Yeah, add that into a little bit of time and you have beer. Okay, so let's look at each of these things very, very shortly. Malt is a roasted grain. Usually in beer making, it is barley, although there are some exceptional wheat beers. There's even a rice beer. I'm not a big fan of that, but it exists. The reason the grains are roasted is to simplify the sugars in it a little bit. The darker your beer, the longer the grain was roasted, and the closer it gets to burning. Hops is actually kind of a fruit off of a kind of, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it's kind of a fruit off of a very long vining style plant. I've seen some just gorgeous pictures where people have grown hops up the side of their house, and you then use those hops, of course, for beer making. Right now, we are in a global hops crisis. Just in case you wonder when you go out to buy your beer making stuff why hops cost so much, there is a global hops shortage right now. So the cheap hops are kind of the most prolific. The more expensive kind of gourmet style hops are harder to get. Yeast, a note on yeast. No, you don't want to just use your regular run-of-the-mill average bread yeast, although there are some things you can do with that that are not bread. Beer making is not one of them. And finally, water. Typically, the water that comes out of your tap is fine. As long as it doesn't have an extreme high level of chlorine or if it's not hard water. Now, having said that, I always filter my water anyway. Now on to types of home brewing. There's three general categories of home brewing. There's the all extract. And extract comes in two forms, that is the liquid form in a can and the dry powdered form, kind of resembles powdered sugar. This is the absolute easiest way to make beer. It requires a little less equipment than the other method, the next easiest method, and it's by far the cheapest because you're using fewer resources at home, and the stuff is, highly processed, and they do it in bulk, so it's pretty cheap. Now, the next variety, which is what we're going to be talking about today, is the partial mash or partial grain method. Now, what this means is that instead of just using all malt extract, which is your sugar base, you're using that in addition to some whole grains that you prepare. Finally, is the all grain method. This is the absolute most difficult and most expensive. You need a lot of special equipment. A lot of people make their own special equipment for these purposes. So sooner or later, when I get the finances to be able to make my all grain equipment, I will probably do an episode on that. But well, a series of episodes probably. But for now, we're just going to be talking about the partial mash method. Now, before we get started into the actual process of home brewing, we need to look at the homebrew debate. There's a lot of debate around homebrewing. A lot of people say, well, why the heck would I want to homebrew when I can just go to my local microbrewery and pick up some just excellent, excellent alcoholic beverages? Or if you're fortunate enough to live in an area that has a microbrew store where they just have, hundreds of different beers from dozens and dozens of different microbreweries, that is, just a great resource. Well, the advantages are, well, one, if you're buying microbrew beer, it can get quite expensive. One of my absolute favorite kinds of microbrew comes from the Rogue Breweries. It is a nut brown ale. If you've not tried the nut brown from Rogue, I would highly recommend it. Although it is a little bit pricey. I mean, I'm not going to kid you. I've seen it going for as much as $12 for a bottle, 12 or 13 even. So if you're a Budweiser drinker, this is going to cost overall about the same, maybe a little bit more. And again, if you're really liking things like Budweiser and Icy Light, quality's not an issue for you. So the cost is going to be the main deciding factor. So there's that to consider. However, if you're doing like microbreweries, you're drinking, Rogue Breweries, Nut Brown, this is going to be significantly cheaper. I think just for the ingredients, the average bottle ends up being between, 50 and 90 cents. So that's not that bad. Most of the equipment you can reuse. There's a few parts of the equipment that you need to, get a new one every now and again, but most of the equipment is reusable. Second reason you might want to do homebrew is because it tastes good. And you can invite your buddies over and say, I made this. It tastes good. And they can all go, wow, cool, man. And finally, it's fun. I mean, as a hacker community, part of what you want to do is get your hands dirty. You want to be able to manipulate every part of the process. And with home brewing, you really can do that. And it's just amazing how you can say, well, I want to use this grain instead of that grain, or I want to try this yeast instead of that yeast, and I want to add 3 ounces extra of hops to see how that, tastes. So that's a, I mean, you have absolute control over the beer making process with home brewing. Now, getting started. The required equipment. Now, this list might seem a little daunting at first. Do not fear. If you're creative, you can do some neat things. What you need during the partial mash method is an 8-quart pot, a fermenting vessel, which can be either glass or plastic, a bottling vessel. Typically, it's plastic. You do not want to use the same thing for your fermenting vessel and your bottling vessel, because you're going to need to stir your beer before you bottle it, because you're going to need to add in a little of extra sugar. So you need a siphon hose and a bottling tool. I just call it a bottling tool. It's a pretty neat thing that when you pick up the siphoning tool, it shuts off the flow of liquid, and then you go into the next bottle. You will need a long-handled spoon, a food-grade spoon, with a non-porous surface. You will need a funnel if you are using a glass fermenting vessel. You will need a bottle capper, bottles, caps, sterilizing solution, hop bag. Of course, you'll need your brewing kit. You'll need a thermometer, a hydrometer, and an airlock. An airlock is kind of a little piece of plastic that has a squiggly tube in it. You put water in it. It does not allow air back into your beer to contaminate it. Now, a couple of notes here. One, your sterilizing solution. Your sterilizing solution is very, very important, and you might be thinking, hey, I can just use a very high concentration of chlorine. Well, you can, but don't. Chlorine is not very highly recommended for home brewing, because you need very long soak times, up to like 15 minutes of soaking your equipment in a chlorinated solution for it to work effectively. And then on top of that, it's very, very difficult to get chlorine back out of your equipment once you've got it in there. If you've ever gotten chlorine on your hands, you know that it takes a good long while of rinsing your hands off to get that chlorine solution off of your hands so your hands don't feel slimy and chloriney anymore. There are some great, great things. I use Seabright, which you can pick up at any home brew store. There's also Be Bright, which is a little bit different, has just a slightly different purpose. But those two things are absolutely excellent. Since I've started using Seabright as my sterilizing solution, I have had no batches of contaminated beer. And I might have mentioned something that some of you are familiar with and some of you are not, and that is the hydrometer. Hydrometer measures the specific gravity of a solution. Pure water is supposed to have a specific gravity of 1. Your beer will have a slightly higher specific gravity because it's got a lot of sugar in it, and the yeast and the chemicals from the hops and all of that, so it'll have a slightly higher specific gravity. Well, when a lot of that converts to alcohol, alcohol has a lower specific gravity than water, so you get much, much closer to having a specific gravity of 1. What a hydrometer is good for is letting you know when your beer is finished, when it has reached full attenuation, when the yeast has done its magical process of turning sugar into a tasty beverage. So, let us get started with the actual brew process now that we know what we need. Step 1, sterilize everything. You want to have a clean, well-lit area. And once you have everything sterilized, start boiling your water. This is going to be a full gallon of water. I just use my stove at home. I throw my big boiling pot on there and I start boiling it. There are special stoves that you can buy, propane stoves that will boil much faster. But I don't want to spend the money on that because my process involves boiling taking time. So the next step is what I call prep stage number two. While the water is heating, I start filtering out the water for the primary fermenting vessel. I use a glass carboy, a 6 gallon carboy. Now, to start off, you need 3 gallons of cold water. So throughout the next 4 or 5 steps, we're going to be filtering water. I'm not going to tell you that we're going to be filtering water. You can figure it out. I have just a little pitcher filter, and I use a documentation system to make sure that I get exactly 3 gallons of water into my carboy. While the water is trickling through my gravity filter, I use one of the sterilized knives that I have to cut open my bags of grain if they're in a sealed bag, and then I fill up the mesh grain bag. Now, this is one of the advantages of doing partial mash versus an all grain brew, is that you can use a grain bag. You're able to just, dump all of the grains because you don't have, more than a pound or so, or two maybe. And you just put them in a grain bag, tie it off, and not have to worry too much about it. With the all grain method, you have a lot more to do. So once the water is boiling, you turn off your heat and you drop your grains in the bag. You're going to set your timer and let this steep for 30 minutes. This is going to infuse all of those nice, tasty sugars and burnt flavors of the grain into the water. Now, while this is steeping, and again, steeping without heat, your water will remain quite hot for a good while. You want to start simmering your malt extract can. Now, make sure you take your label off and clean it well and everything. But you want to bring it to a boil and then reduce the heat to a simmer. If you do what I do, I use a smaller pan and I flip the can several times. The reason I do this is to ensure that the malt is completely liquid inside. I've used the larger pan method, but I found that, it takes longer for the water to boil in a larger pan because you have more water, obviously, and it doesn't seem to liquefy all of the malt extract inside. It's kind of like a molasse-like substance. I found with the smaller pan, I don't get water on my oven glove, which I just use the old-fashioned cloth oven gloves. If they get wet, you burn yourself. So I don't get water on that, and I can just flip the can over a few times. Convection takes place inside the can. It gets everything moving really nicely. So I simmer this for about 20 minutes. Okay. After the steeping process is finished, I remove the malt bag. Now, what I do is I take two chopsticks and I kind of grab the knot that I tied in the top of the malt bag, flip it over a few times so that the bag itself is wrapped around the chopsticks. Then I set that on the side of the brew pot and let it drip off. Because you've got some nice, tasty sugar still in there. You don't want to squeeze it, but you definitely want to get all the sugar out of there. Next, you bring what is rapidly becoming your wort or unfermented beer. You want to bring that back to a boil. Once it's boiling, you turn it off. Add your malt extracts, both your can, liquid one. You want to, open that with a can opener. I recommend a manual can opener to an automated can opener because you have a freaking huge can. And your dried extract. Now, I like to add my dried extract first because it needs to dissolve. Then add in your liquid extract. Use one of your sterilized spatulas to get all the gooey goodness from out the inside of the can. And then on to the next step. You're going to put your hops into a bag, put the bag into the pot, and tie it off to the handle. Now, a hops bag is supposedly optional. However, it saves you monumental headaches later on because you don't have to filter the hops back out. The debate being, of course, that if you're using a hops bag, you're not getting a total infusion of the hops into the beer because they're separated off by a microfiber bag. But in my experience, the flavor difference is not that great, and the headache difference is, so just use a hops bag. But again, you can decide to do that yourself. You relight the stove and bring it to a boil. Now, when you do this, you've just added very, very large amounts of sugar. You've added these strange ingredients called hops, which add your bitter and your longevity to your beer. It's going to start foaming, and this is a very, very fine foam, and you want to let it foam up a few times until it's boiling rather than foaming. Now, you're going to need to do a little bit of heat adjusting on this stage. If you're using one of those big, massive outdoor propane burners, you're going to need to be really, really careful about boil over. Because after it's done foaming, you're going to boil it for another 25 minutes. Now, your boiling is still going to boil up because of the amount of sugar that you've got in there. It's going to want to, boil up the sides of your pot. And if you're not careful, if you're boiling it too hard, it will boil over the top. This is not good because you're going to lose sugar. You have the opportunity to scald your wort, and that's not going to taste good. So you want to be very, very careful with your heat adjustment. Adjust it just so that it's boiling, but it's not boiling up the sides of the pot. Now, while we are boiling this, let's talk a little bit about hops. Because we just threw them in the pot, you need to know a little bit about them. Hops give you your nice, tasty bitterness. If you've ever had an unhopped beer, you'll notice that it's kind of odd. I really, really doubt that you've had an unhopped beer in the United States unless you've made it yourself or a friend has made it. I've made a couple unhopped beers just because I like to do medieval reenactment on occasion, and an unhopped beer is period. So, while you're boiling your hops, you are actually changing the chemical composition of your hops. The hops that you add at the beginning of your boil process will give you more aroma and less bitterness. The hops that you add at the end of your process will give you more bitterness and less aroma. Interesting, huh? So, if you want a very, very bitter beer, you're going to want to throw in your hops toward the end of the brewing, this boiling process here. So, last like 5 minutes of your boiling process. That's just a little note. If you don't like a bitter beer, throw it all in at the beginning. It'll give you a nice floral smell and not all that much bitterness. During the last 10 minutes of the boil process, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on, so you should already have your 3 gallons of cold water in your carboy before this time. Because you're going to need to take 2 cups of cold water and 1 cup of your wort out of your boiling pot. Add the, well, sorry, don't add the yeast yet. Make sure that your temperature is below 110 degrees in your cup. If it's not, add in a little bit more cold water. Make sure that the water is sterile and, whatever. You're not going to want to use like water that's been sitting out for 3 days, or I'm hesitant to use ice cubes in this part of the process just because you never know what's in that ice cube. There might have been some bacterium in the freezer. So just make sure that your temperature is down below 110 degrees, which is not that hard. Usually when I do 2 cups of cold water and 1 cup of wort, I have perfect temperature. So you add the yeast, let it sit, maybe stir it a couple of times. If you're adding in extra hops for bitterness, we're getting to that 5 minute mark. Okay. So we've finished our boiling of the wort. We're going to pull out the hop bag from the wort, let it drip for a few seconds, and put it aside. You can reuse that nice hop bag. Now you're going to carefully pour the hot wort into the cold H2O. This is why it's important to have those 3 gallons of cold water in your fermenter. If you use a glass carboy like I do, you're going to need that cold water to temper the heat of the hot wort. If you just dump in boiling a hot wort inside a, room temperature carboy, there's a chance that you can crack that carboy and have hot wort all over your floor. Not what we want. So you stir or mix. If you're using a plastic fermenter, just a bucket, you can stir. If you're using a glass carboy, just kind of grab the neck of the carboy and swirl it around for a little while. Take your temperature of your wort. Make sure again that it's below 110 degrees. If it's not yet, just add more H2O, more water up to the 5 gallon mark. How you want to determine what 5 gallons is entirely up to you. What I do is I measure off 1 and 2 gallons on the side of my carboy. Then I draw a line. I measure the distance between 1 and 2 because there's no curve of the bottle there. And then I just go up the side, measuring that distance to 5 gallons. Now, when the temperature is below 110, preferably around 100 degrees, you want to add the yeast. And put your airlock on, make sure that there's a little bit of water in your airlock. Over the next 24 hours, that airlock should start bubbling. Very, very happily, you should see some foam developing on the surface of your beer. And it should just be a pleasant, pleasant aroma. You'll probably have never smelled anything quite like this before. If this process doesn't start up pretty vigorously in the first 24 hours, you have a problem. This problem could be that you added the yeast too early. If you didn't take a temperature gauge and measure the wort before you threw in the yeast, you might have killed off your yeast by throwing it in too early. You might have contaminated your beer. You can tell if you've contaminated your beer if in that, same 24 hours you don't have a lot of bubbling, but you have like not tan substance growing on the surface of your beer, like a black or a brown substance kind of growing there, and no fermentation taking place, which is evidenced by those bubbles. So if you're not fermenting, you can try adding some more yeast, get another packet of yeast and add it in, see if you can kickstart your fermentation that way. If that doesn't work, you probably contaminated it and you're, out of luck, sorry. Now for the conclusion. You're going to want to, if you can, keep your beer below 110 degrees. There are some interesting things that happen if your beer gets too hot. Now, if you're making like a lager, for example, you're going to want to make sure that that beer stays around, I think it's 60 to 70 degrees, and I think 70 degrees is on the high end for your lagers. But you're going to want to keep your beer cool. If your beer gets too hot, it'll start adding in funky flavors. And we don't like funky flavors because we want to give this beer to our friends and we want them to all say, wow, this is a great beer. How'd you do it? So kind of keep an eye on your beer. Keep it cool. If you have a nice cool basement like I do, ideal. You put it down in the basement before you add the yeast. It sits down there. It's nice and cool. It ferments. And it's happy. Now, kind of the final note, you're going to let this primary fermenter sit for about a week. It'll stop fermenting in the first couple of days. The next stage is called the settling process, where a lot of the yeast coagulates and falls out of the beer. And we'll talk about some more stuff next time when we go on to the bottling episode, which will be combined with the fermenting fun episode. Hope you found this useful, and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs. We'll be right back.